Address to Young Men on the Right Use of Greek Literature by St. Basil the Great. Part 3. If we were minded to disregard attention to the body, we should be in little danger of prizing anything else unduly. For of what use now are riches if one scorns the pleasures of the flesh? I certainly see none, unless, as in the case of the mythological dragons, there is some satisfaction in guarding hidden treasure. Of a truth, one who had learned to be independent of this sort of thing would be loath to attempt anything mean or low, either in word or deed. For superfluity, be it Lydian gold dust or the work of the gold-gathering ants, he would disdain in proportion to its needlessness. And of course he would make the necessities of life, not its pleasures, the measure of need. Forsooth, those who exceed the bounds of necessity, like men who are sliding down an inclined plane, can nowhere gain a footing to check their precipitous flight, for the more they can scrape together, so much, or even more, do they need for the gratification of their desires. As Solon, the son of Exocestides, puts it, no definite limit is set to a man's wealth. Also, one should hear Theognis the teacher on this point. I do not long to be rich, nor do I pray for riches, but let it be given me to live with a little, suffering no ill. I also admire the wholesale contempt of all human possessions that which Diogenes expressed, who showed himself richer than the great Persian king, since he needed less for living. But we are wont to be satisfied with nothing save the talents of the Mycian Pythias, with limitless acres of land, and more herds of cattle than may be counted. Yet I believe that if riches fail us, we should not mourn for them, and if we have them, we should not think more of possessing them than of using them rightly. For Socrates expressed an admirable thought when he said that a rich, purse-proud man was never an object of admiration with him, until he learned that the man knew how to use his wealth. If Phidias and Polycletus had been very proud of the gold and ivory with which the one constructed the statue of the Jupiter of Elis, the other the Juno of Argos, they would have been laughed at, because priding themselves in treasure produced by no merit of theirs, and overlooking their art, from which the gold gained greater beauty and worth. Then shall we think that we are open to less reproach, if we hold that virtue is not, in and of itself, a sufficient ornament? Again, shall we, while manifestly ignoring riches and scorning sensual pleasures, court adulation and fulsome praise, vying with the fox of Archilochus in cunning and craft? Of a truth, there is nothing which the wise man must more guard against than the temptation to live for praise, and to study what pleases the crowd. Rather, truth should be made the guide of one's life, so that if one needs speak against all men, and be in ill favor and danger for virtue's sake, he shall not swerve at all from that which he considers right. Else, how shall we say that he differs from the Egyptian sophist, who at pleasure turned himself into a tree, an animal, fire, water, or anything else? Such a man now praises justice to those who esteem it, and now expresses opposite sentiments when he sees that wrong is in good repute. This is the fawner's trick. Just as the polypus is said to take the color of the ground upon which it lies, so he conforms his opinions to those of his associates. To be sure, we shall become more intimately acquainted with these precepts in the sacred writings, but it is incumbent upon us, for the present, to trace, as it were, the silhouette of virtue in the pagan authors. For those who carefully gather the useful from each book are wont, like mighty rivers, to gain accessions on every hand. For the precept of the poet, which bids us add little to little, must be taken as applying not so much to the accumulation of riches as of the various branches of learning. In line with this, Bias said to his son, who, as he was about to set out for Egypt, was inquiring what course he could pursue to give his father the greatest satisfaction, "Store up means for the journey of old age." By means, he meant virtue, but he placed too great restrictions upon it, since he limited its usefulness to the earthly life. For if any one mentions the old age of Tithonus, or of Arganthonius, or of that Methuselah, who is said to have lacked but 30 years of being a millenarian, or even if he reckons the entire period since the creation, I will laugh as at the fancies of a child, since I look forward to that long undying age, of the extent of which there is no limit for the mind of man to grasp, any more than there is of the life immortal. For the journey of this life eternal, I would advise you to husband resources, leaving no stone unturned, as the proverb has it, whence you might derive any aid. From this task we shall not shrink, because it is hard and laborious. But remembering the precept that every man ought to choose the better life, and expecting that association will render it pleasant, we shall busy ourselves with those things that are best. For it is shameful to squander the present, and later to call back the past in anguish, when no more time is given. In the above treatise I have explained to you some of the things which I deem the most to be desired. Of others I shall continue to counsel you so long as life is allowed me. Now, the sick are of three classes, according to the degrees of their sickness. May you not seem to belong to the third or incurable class, nor show a spiritual malady like that of their bodies. For those who are slightly indisposed visit physicians in person, and those who are seized by violent sickness call physicians. But those who are suffering from a hopelessly incurable melancholy do not even admit the physicians if they come. May this now not be your plight, as would seem to be the case, were you to shun these right counsels. End of Address to Young Men on the Right Use of Greek Literature.